This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 4, Episode 42, Outrageous Selections. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Mark Garraway joins me on the line as we talk about one-leg drills, what to do when your practice doesn't match your performance, and how to deal with selectors who insist on technical perfection. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's time for the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here at Pitch Vision Academy. And looking on from my bookshelf, I've noticed this morning is Bob Woolmer's smiling face. I've been looking at his Art and Science of Cricket book today, and that's always a great book to go over again and again because it's quite the tome. And joining me is a man who's had plenty of experience with Bob Woolmer himself. It's Mark Garraway, Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. How's it going, Garris?
Yeah, all good. We're looking forward to a bit of holiday time, actually. I've got a bit of time off, which is nice.
Fantastic. Of course, once you've read that Bob Woolmer book, if you've decided you've read it and digested it enough, then you can always use it as a doorstop or a wedge or something like that because it's massive.
It is. It's a great book, though, isn't it? And you know, there's some bits in it that we actually use on level 3 and level 4, which, despite the fact that it was written, you know, before his untimely death, it stood the test of time, and in fact, will probably stand up a lot longer than that as well, because he was so intuitive and he was so into, yeah, these are the basics, but also we can work around some of those basics as well. A magnificent man and a fantastic coach, sorely missed.
Absolutely, and a great thinker on the game, and always coming up with new ideas. Of course, he had the idea of trying to communicate with the captain through radio technology, which was quickly stamped on, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was. But he was also a massive innovator of things like the reverse sweep and the sweep. And certainly when he was at Warwickshire, I remember Raj Maru, who I played with at Hampshire, coming back from a first team game where he was completely baffled because everybody was literally getting down on one knee and just whacking him off of the length every single ball. And Raj was an experienced cricketer, but at the time hadn't come across anything like it. And you had Dermot Reeve and various others, you know, reverse donkeying him over the top of over the top of cover point, and Raj was lost.
Yeah, that's cheeky. And he goes, you wrote a drill this week on the, oh, last week, I should say, on the Pitch Vision website, which was originally taught to you by Bob, and it was the one leg drill where you get your weight forward by standing on your front foot to play some shots.
Yeah, well, there was two drills actually. The one leg one I referred to a long time ago. This one's where you actually keep your feet still, where you push your head towards the ball, and often are surprised at how much power and timing you can get by allowing the ball to come onto you. Yeah, that one we were talking about, which was a great one for Bob, that he taught a number of players that I was working with at the time.
And we've had some follow-up on that. Somebody commented, AB, of course, who is a friend of Pitch Vision Academy in many ways. He contributes to the podcast with his questions and he's written articles for us in the past. And he came up with some follow-up on that, which I thought might be interesting to speak about. He was asking about reaction time. And of course, this is a classic of modern sports science, in that the speed, when someone's bowling very quickly, it's not possible to react if you're just trying to watch the ball. So he was saying, let me just read exactly what he's saying. Tracking the ball over the last quarter of its journey gives us important information for subsequent shots. But in terms of helping us make contact with this particular delivery, the information comes too late to be acted on. In baseball hitting, I was coached that you either hit the ball or you watch the ball all the way, but you can't do both. The pitches you watch give you information that you then use to hit subsequent pitches. I use the same concept when coaching cricket batsmen. So, Garris, where do you stand on that watching the ball all the way, which is what the drill was talking about teaching people?
It wasn't necessarily talking about that. That was his interpretation of it. It's watching the ball come towards you, not necessarily watching the ball all the way onto the bat.
Yeah,
that was not referred to in the article. So The interesting one on it for me is the studies that have been done out of various universities around the world, and I'm always a little bit skeptical of studies unless they've had a huge amount of money invested into them and they've got a very good field of evidence. But most bits of research come with, two players did this and two players did that, which isn't enough to convince me that that there's a general recommendation that comes out that hits everybody. However, there's some really good research that comes out that the difference between good players and great players, or difference between club players and people that go on to play county and test cricket, and this has been verified and it is credible, is that the test players or the good players have the ability to pick up information very quickly out of the hand, then refocus their eyes into the place on the pitch that they think the ball's going to bounce, and then refocus their eyes somewhere near contact, which allows them to be excellent at contact. Whereas the club players find it difficult to pick the ball up and get all of the information that they need straight away, which often makes their prediction or their anticipation of where the ball bounces less accurate. And they find it very difficult to then predict where the ball's going to end up. As a result, they find that a bit more difficult when they face up against elite bowlers. So that's the research that's come out of it. The drill itself that I was talking about is that you can often, by standing still, surprise yourself at how much better you end up watching the ball as a result of being still and being balanced. That was the emphasis of the drill in terms of eyesight, and it's particularly relevant to the people who lead their movement with their head. As was described in the article itself, because some people lead their movement with their foot and often play with their chin up, which gives the impression that they're not watching the ball particularly well in any of the post-bounce stage, but actually because their eyes work in a downward fashion, they're able to watch the ball from that position. Whereas people that lead with their head need to nod the head towards the contact, not necessarily into the contact with the bat.
The other question that I had in mind around this area was that we are talking about the top level of speeds here, the high 80s, 90 mile an hour plus type bowling, where it is impossible to react to what's happening with the ball alone. How much of that goes into slower bowling, either at club level when the fast bowling is not as fast, or when we're talking about spin bowling?
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, a couple of the research documents that have been done, one being out of Oxford actually, was bowling machines at 70 miles an hour, which is probably more relevant to the people that listen to this show rather than guys that are facing, 85 mile an hour plus bowlers in Test cricket. So they would their research and the research that sort of, not I'm quoting, but I'm relating to, comes at sort of 70 miles an hour type stuff. So it's relevant. So everything that we've talked about today is really relevant. And if you can work at your ability to watch the ball initially, and they talk in saccades, which isn't language that I'm particularly familiar with, but their first saccade is about getting that information, and the second one is about them refocusing your eyes into where the ball's likely to bounce because you can't track the ball all the way. And then the third one is to track it as far as you can into or towards contact. But that's all done at 70 miles an hour. So I think that stuff is all relevant. And the better you can get at that first point of watching the ball, the better your anticipation is going to be. And then the better your prediction of where the ball bounce is going to be as a result. In terms of spin, which is 50 miles an hour down, really, I don't know because there aren't any research papers as yet on it. I wouldn't want to comment on how the eyes function in that regard because I'm not an expert on it. But there is a body of evidence that could be created, particularly now we've got things like Merlin bowling machines around that I think would make it really good because you can measure the speed of Merlin and you can adjust the speed of Merlin. And it would be interesting to see what is the point where you can actually track the ball a bit better, or can you not do it irrespective of ball pace? Because those questions have yet to be answered, or certainly if they have been answered, I've not been privy to that information.
And interestingly, statistically, we were talking about the pace of the bowling. And of course, we have Pitch Vision Interactive, which is available at pitchvision.com/interactive, which is gathering data from pitch vision systems all around the world and rating people in different ways. One of the ways we do that is average speed of bowler. And if I've just been looking at it while you were talking there, Gareth, and we're talking about average speed of bowler. I've filtered it down for adults only. And for adults who have bowled more than 100 balls on a pitch vision system, there's only three players who bowl with an average speed of over 70 miles an hour.
Which isn't a surprise.
Yeah, and there's only 11 who average over 60. So
Is that?
it very, very quickly tails off. You only have to go, you only have to go to number 12 on the list before it's 59.77 miles per hour. That's 96 kilometers an hour. So I guess when we're talking about the levels, when you're coming through the system or you're playing at club level, that's what your eyes do there is more important than what happens at 90 miles an hour, because you're very unlikely to face someone who's ever going to bowl that at you.
Yeah, and if you do, you'll probably face them for 1 week and never see them again because they'll be snapped up pretty sharpish, won't they?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can count the 90 mile per hour bowlers in a very small amount of time, can't you, in the world? Won't take you long to go through them. Okay, let's move on to our yes no round. Three questions that Gareth and I can only answer yes or no, no matter how much more we want to say. So I've loaded up the questions into our high tech system here, Gareth, and I'm going to read them out. So you're ready to go.
I
First question: technical perfection is a myth.
Yes.
Yes. Second question: teams without confidence are more likely to switch off under pressure.
Yes.
Yes. Third question: two new balls means less attacking spin bowling.
No.
No. It's time now on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show for our interview section. And this week I am speaking to Josh Hunter-Jordan, who is a budding young cricketer from the Cambridge area who plays cricket in Cambridge. And he has also played Essex age group cricket and is hoping to make a breakthrough into the professional game in the next couple of years. Welcome to the show, Josh.
Thanks very much.
Now, Josh, you're about to embark on a trip overseas in the UK winter. You're going down to South Africa to join up with friend of Pitch Vision Academy, Ryan Marron, and his Cape Town International Cricket Academy.
Yes, I am. Can't wait to leave now. It's very soon, so I'm really looking forward to it.
What was it that made you think this is exactly the type of thing that I need to take my game to the next level and get me up to the standard that's required to play at a professional level of cricket?
Well, it started off, I was just looking online for gap year opportunities to see what sort of things are out there. I think what helped was I was born in South Africa, so I was really keen to go back there for a year and see what the cricket's like there and try and take my game to the next level with experience that other people might not have. I looked at the academy and I thought the setup they had there looked very professional, and the programs that Ryan sent through looked just like the sort of things I wanted to see. And then I thought I could really make significant improvements from what he was putting in front of me with the type of facilities I was going to be training in.
Now, it's a step up in intensity, isn't it? How do you feel about getting into that hothouse environment?
Well, I was very lucky at school. We trained pretty much every day throughout the whole summer term, and we also trained a lot for the winter. I know this is obviously going to be a step up in intensity from that, but in terms of the volume of training, hopefully it won't be too much of a shock, and I'll be able to sufficiently adapt to make significant improvements to my game.
You are going to be in a different situation from what you're used to. So that I guess is a challenge in itself to be able to play at a high standard and also get used to new people and new surroundings.
Yeah, I think it will definitely be a challenge to test myself against a really high standard of cricket in a different country when I'm far away from home. But I'm really looking forward to the challenge, to be honest. And it's something I really wanted to do, and hopefully I can rise to it.
So what are you hoping to achieve once you've been through the program, you come out the other side? Ideally, you'll be a better player and a more rounded person, perhaps. What are you looking to achieve when you get back to England?
Well, I'm looking to get out of the academy. I'm looking for particularly to improve the mental side of the game. I think technically I'm not too bad at the moment. Obviously, there's improvements to be made, but I think I can make significant strides in the mental side of the game, which I think the higher standard you play becomes more integral to your performance.
Yeah, the mental side is absolutely key, and it's one thing that is very difficult to learn. You can spend a lot of time in nets hitting balls, can't you? And that can help. You can have a coach give you advice on where the bat is swinging or where your head is going, technical side of things. But the mental side of the game is one of those things you kind of have to work out for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's no substitute for experience on the cricket field, and I think going overseas when other people will just be hitting balls in the nets all winter, actually playing matches against high quality opposition will really stand me in good stead for the coming season. So I'm really excited about this challenge.
Well, Josh, it's great that you're so focused. I hope you really improve as a cricketer when you go out there. But I also hope that you make sure you have some time to have some fun, because Cape Town is a great city. I've been there, and it's a great place to stay. And you can enjoy it as well as make yourself a better player while you're out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually born in Cape Town, so I've been back there quite a few times, and I've still got some family there and some friends there, so hopefully I'll be able to catch up with all of them and have a really good time out there as well.
Excellent. Thanks for your time today.
Okay, no worries.
Time now for the mailbag. And of course, every week we have a couple of questions that are sent in to us via the various methods that you can get in touch. One of those, of course, being our email, which is coach@pitchvision.com. But there's also plenty of other offices which I can inform you of towards the end of the show. But for now, let's get straight into the questions. And the first one of those is from Mark. And Mark's got a bit of a dilemma. He's taken over as the senior coach and player at a club in Australia, which plays in a semi-professional competition. And he says, for many years, the club has been down near the bottom. I get the feeling the hard work and dedication the players are giving me is not enough. We're ticking the boxes of training, working on our fielding, batting and bowling in the nets under match intensity. But come game day, their heads just aren't in the game. We got knocked over for 95 at the weekend. He says the opposition's plan was to bowl the fifth or sixth stump line to a 7-2 field, and we couldn't handle the pressure. I need to involve our players into some type of self-belief task or mental strength training so that when the heat gets turned up, we know how to cool the situation through our actions. All advice is appreciated. So Mark's a desperate man. He seems to be doing everything right, but it's not coming together on the pitch. What's going on, Gareth?
Yeah, oh, crikey, it's a great question, isn't it? Because it's given us some dead good detail, but also it's sort of probably touched the tip of the iceberg in many ways as well. So, you know, for us to give a definitive on that's going to be incredibly, incredibly difficult. But firstly, well done for organising your practices and getting the intensity right. And that's not just well done to Mark, but also well done to the people around him are committing so well to trying to find a way of getting that conversion from practice into matches. Confidence is a really, really interesting thing, isn't it? And every team in the world has been rolled over for 90-odd or 110 or whatever the case may be. So it's often very easy to think that you're alone in this situation when it happens to you. I've often been in sides that have been rolled over for 100 one week, and then all of a sudden that's been the sort of tipping point, I suppose, because people have just had a really good look at their own basics as batters and gone, this isn't good enough. And I think often when you go, you know, we talk about form and confidence and all of those things. It's really nice, but often it's quite jargony. And the real thing about batting to me is looking at your core basics, and they might be different for you than they are for somebody else. But you know, if I was really honest as a cricketer, and if I was really honestly reviewing, which would be the starting point for me if I was Mark now, I would say to each individual, right, what is it that you do when you're at your best? What are your core basics that you do when you're at your best? And get people to write those down, to stick them where they're visible. We've talked about affirmation stuff before. You picked up a thing the other day which changes where they're coming from, and so we don't get used to just seeing it on the fridge or in the bag. But what is it we do when we're at our best? And are we actually committing to that when we go into practice? Are we committing to that when we play a game? Because you don't get bowled out for 100 if your core basics are in place and everybody is doing those core basics on a very, you know, very often you don't get bowled out for 100. That will happen at times, but in the main, if you get your core basics right, then that's important. And as a team, your core basics might be that you're going to run between wickets really hard. You're going to create 10 opportunities that you wouldn't have done the previous week. That could be that every time a ball hits the thigh pad, we look to run first. That's our automated response. Our core basic might be that we're going to make the bowlers bowl at us. So that 7-2 tactic that you've talked about from your own perspective of not being able to handle, you know, can we get better at leaving the ball and sending messages out to the opposition about how confident we are of leaving that ball, which will suck the bowler into areas where we can start to score, whether it be with tucked in singles to mid wicket or whether it be with boundary options. But honestly, every time we talk about confidence, I have a little giggle inside and I think, you know, is this about confidence or is that just an easy thing to chuck out? Are we really visiting our core basics as individuals, as batters, to get ourselves out of this batting predicament that we're in? Because if you do that, and it might mean that Mark needs to spend 20 minutes with each individual player, getting them to define to him what their core basics are, and then getting them to commit to those when they go into the practice. And don't worry about running between the wickets in practices and all of the things that we encourage. Go back to those core basics, get those right, and then you can do the funky things on top. That would be my starting point for me. Confidence is one thing, but confidence comes from you getting your core basics right on a consistent basis and having the confidence that practice of getting it right takes that into matches, and that would be my starting point.
So what we're really saying is, it doesn't. You don't need to do anything special. It's not something where you need to call in the local psychologist to start showing people ink spots. You can just tweak things, be mindful of things, be safe in the knowledge that if you're practicing in the right ways, then things will come together as long as you're doing the basics as well as you can do them. Hope that helps. Let us know how you get on. If you score 327 in your next match, you can thank us. Next question is from Gover. Gover says, I'm a coach at a high school, so two coaches this week, and I have a bowler who bowls off the wrong foot. He takes wickets regularly without action. He also bowls a good line and length, swings the ball and controls it well. My problem is that whenever I try and change his action, he loses control of the ball and swing. He's got the best bowling stats in the province, and he's always drawn the attention of the under-14 national selectors. But here's the real kicker. The selector said they can't take him until he fixes his bowling action. I was given 2 weeks to work on him. How can I go about changing him? So that's the horns of a dilemma for Gover. You've got to change this guy's action in 2 weeks. Otherwise, he's going to miss out. Gareth, nightmare.
Well, I'm flabbergasted by this question. Gover, you sound really frustrated, and I totally understand where you are. You're not going to change him in 2 weeks, mate. It's going to be absolutely impossible. And as you've experienced before, every time you have tried to change something about his action, which is ingrained and which is the way he wants to move and which he's very effective at, you meet opposition, not just from him, but he loses his control and loses his swing. I mean, the whole thing on this, and it's a classic because it probably was the same as this in the UK up until a few years ago, that a bowler like this would have been dismissed purely because of what their action looked like. And my argument on this would be it's not the bowler that needs to change, but the selectors. You know, otherwise, Mike Proctor would have never have played a first-class game of cricket and would never have been the all-rounder that he was and the bowling great that he was. You know, Nintini would have never have played a first-class game of cricket because his bowling action didn't conform with what selectors maybe wanted at the time. But his stats were so good, his personality was so good. And they, and ultimately, the best selectors are the ones that pick on stats and character. So the question to me is, how can you persuade the selectors or shift the mindset, which seems to be very closed at the moment, of the selectors? And maybe you can't do that on your own. Maybe you need some support with that. You've got the statistical evidence, which is irrefutable. Can you get views of other coaches? Can you use a Facebook blog or something to get some support from people that are respected around the country to help this young lad be recognised for what he is, which is a fantastic fast bowler who dominates the stats, does it in his own way. And I can tell you now that if you turned up and played against my school side with this young lad, then he would cause some problems, A, because he's got an unusual action, but also he's got ability, pace and swing. And the selectors have got to come round to that. It's not for the kid to change and then risk losing what he's got. It's for the selectors' mindset to be changed. But that's only going to happen through passionate people like yourself getting on board and doing some smart things to shift their mindsets. If it never happens, then I don't know which country you're in, but it's in a worse place because of it. So don't change the kid. The kid's doing great stuff. You're doing great stuff. Support the boy and try to educate the people above that are limiting that individual, because it won't just be him. It'll be other individuals that don't do things that conforms visually that they'll be stopping from playing. And the fact is that, you know, if every player with an unconventional style was cut off because it didn't look right, then Test cricket would be a very boring place now.
Yeah, bang the drum and as much as possible. Respectfully, of course, but as much as possible, say, you know, this guy is really good. Why do we need to change him and risk not making him good enough? Even if a selector is so convinced that because he doesn't bowl with a side-on bowling action, there's no way he can succeed at that level. Purely on the basis of statistics, you could say, well, look, why don't we give him a couple of games, see how he goes? It might go wrong. If it does, he's had his chance, thanks very much. But the more pressure you can exert on people on selectors to do that, to give him that chance, to give him the opportunity, then the more chance he's got to be able to shine and show that it doesn't matter whether he bowls a little bit off the wrong foot if he can take wickets at that level.
Mike Proctor was pretty good, wasn't he?
He was.
And there were others, you know, there were others that have done some incredible things by doing it because it fits with them.
Yeah, well, Malinga, of course. Know.
Yeah, absolutely. Max Walker, you know, you can go back over time and you only have to watch a game of cricket to realise it. So yeah. Educate them, mate. If you do that, you're doing a great job.
And of course, if all else fails, ring him up and go, do you know what? I've absolutely sorted his action out. He's available for next week's game. And he can just rock up and just do what he does and take six wickets and and then you can cop the flag for it.
Yeah, and they'll take the credit for it, being great selectors. There you go.
Okay, let's wrap up the mailbag now and head over to the newsroom where Daisy Cutter is waiting with this week's Pitch Vision headlines.
Thank you guys. Hi, I'm Daisy Cutter and this is the Pitch Vision News. As previously reported, Pitch Vision have now completed installation for the SmartNet at the ICC Academy in Dubai. General Manager David Jenkins said the feedback is going to be synced onto two large plasma screens at both batting and bowling ends. This will generate instant feedback for our players. The venue is often frequented by some of the world's top teams and is able to offer ball tracking at all levels. In the world of Pitch Vision Interactive, we are comparing line and length. While the best length bowlers are scoring between 50 and 70% accuracy, line bowling is a lot more accurate. Six bowlers are within 0.1 of a perfect off-stump line, with 12-year-old Donny in South Africa achieving perfection of 103 balls he has bowled. For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's the Pitch Vision News for this week. I've been Daisy Cutter, and now it's back to the panel.
Thank you very much, Daisy, and we'll hear more from you again next week. But Gareth, now it's time for your soapbox. 60 seconds where you can rant away about anything that you like without interruption, but you have to keep going right to the end. So the clock starts now.
When I was a kid and I used to go over to Hampshire and practice in the nets at Hampshire, and I'd get probably 15 minutes, 20 minutes maximum to bat in the nets. One of the most frustrating things for me is if I was batting in the nets and then a coach would come down and give me some advice and break my flow and reduce the number of balls that I could face in that net. And they'd give me some technical input and then expect me to be able to, in a net condition where I'm practicing for matches and I've got bowlers running in, to be able to put some of those things in place. And I keep that in mind as a coach, my frustrations about that whole experience, because I think it's really important. If you're going to do any technical interventions, then you do them outside of a net situation. You do them in your one-to-ones, you do them away from the nets, and then you test them in the nets. And I've talked about that before, but I've seen coaches in the last few weeks completely break people by going down because they have this limited amount of time where they get the opportunity of bowlers coming at them, and all that they've got going through their head is, can you do this technically? Can you do that? Try and do this, try and do that. And actually, they go to pieces. So it's something that I've always been very mindful of as a coach, and I'd really, really encourage others to do your technical work outside of a net. It takes some time to do it, but actually just let people play. Set the theme, set the standard, and then just let people play in the nets. Review it properly afterwards.
And that is just about where we wrap things up for another week on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's been another cracker, but before we go, there's a couple of things we need to do, the first of which is decide on the winner of this week's prize, which is, of course, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And Gareth, I think we had two really good questions this week. We had Mark's question about handling pressure of a new side where he's become the coach, and Gove's question about the trials and tribulations of dealing with selectors. So which one did you prefer?
Well, we said like a few weeks ago, we wanted an upping in the question, and both Mark and Gove have done that. I'd like to thank them both for sending some great questions. I'm going to go with Gove's one this week, because we haven't talked about, and he probably didn't even mean to forget us talking about selectors and trying to educate upwards, managing upwards. But I'm going to go with Gove's because I felt that it was something that we've not discussed previously. And I'm really interested in what happens next. So I encourage Gove to keep us updated. So thank you to both, but Gove is the winner this week.
Congratulations, Gove. Hopefully, you can let us know what happens, what strategy you take, and how effective it becomes. And hopefully that young lad, well, maybe in a few years' time, we'll see him on the international stage and everything will be well. Now, Gareth, if someone wanted to get in touch with the show, send in their own question, the standards are pretty high, so you have to send in a good question. But if someone wanted to do that, what would they need to do to get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, indeed. There are also international numbers on the website, pitchvision.com/academy. And you can use Skype, of course, or any other voice over IP type technology to call us from anywhere in the world. You can also find us on Facebook. Facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy is where we hang out. You can post questions there. People do quite a lot of the time. And you can also send your very short questions to us using Twitter. We're over there at Pitch Vision Acad. And I post up as much as I can, short little coaching tips and tricks and playing tips and tricks up on there. So if you want to follow us, you can do so and get some advice most days. Sometimes it's my frustrations and often it's some little nugget from the archive or something where we can talk about iPads or something like that, because I do love talking about technology and I love talking about cricket. That's all for this week. I hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, Dave.